This is tape three with Mr. Lawson. Continue. When I heard Dr. King in Bridgeport last week, he put great emphasis on the philosophy of personal responsibility of a Negro to do whatever his job was well. He said, street sweeper, be the street sweeper that will be advised by the angels. You know, this line. This, as far as I know, is relatively new in his treatment of these matters, isn't it?
No, actually it's not.
But I'd like to, it's not, it's been part of the whole, all the way
yes,
through.
Yes, right.
On previous occasions it hadn't appeared, the previous occasion I heard him speak.
Yes, well now, he of course has generally emphasized this line in his college speaking.
I haven't heard
yes,
that.
Yes, right, because in going to colleges and universities, this has been the line that he's taken of the need for the Negro to press forward, to see to it that he was qualified, to have the motive to do the best job possible, to seize the opportunities of the new day that was approaching.
And to seek competition.
Right.
Rather
exactly.
than avoid competition.
Right.
The reason I'm asking this particular question is this. The old split between the Niagara movement and the NAACP in its early days and the whole tradition of Tuskegee,
right.
where it's a question of the self-improvement and do the job well as opposed to an aggressive action toward civil rights and surrounding matters.
Right.
Now, there's still, as far as I can make out, some real resistance to even mentioning, say, do the job well. I should say it to certain Negroes, and the white man is saying it. This is taken as an insult.
Right.
I ask this as a question, you see, as a question.
Sure.
Of course, it is being said by a Dr. King, that's a little different. It's bound to feel different. But still, from some Negroes, it's still taken by other Negroes as an affront. As far as I can make out, this is reported to me as such. This split between, say, on one hand, the activism and the civil rights approach and the question of personal career, personal achievement, that split, how real is that as a, in terms of feeling or resentments or philosophy?
Now, I resent this coming from those Negroes who are motivated primarily to see this as an alternative to the need for action. Now, and this may be where the antagonism occurs. I know there are a lot of us, as an example, who resent certain educators who are always emphasizing this, but they emphasize it as being the way that contradicts the emerging nonviolent total approach. Whereas we in the nonviolent approach are not trying to, you know, therefore throw out the need for our being able to participate and compete in a total economy. But what we're saying is that instead, that no matter how well qualified we are, we've got to change the attitude and the structures of our society in order to permit this moving in competition into an open society.
Now, as you accept this, there's no such thing as a mystique or magic of civil rights or anything else.
Right.
The responsibility increases and doesn't decrease.
Exactly. And therefore, for example, we know from both practical experience and from our overall concern that there are far too many opportunities now that are available that the educational patterns have not prepared Negro young people. We've had this time after time again in certain situations here in Memphis. Now, still these principals, and just recently they did this, throw back at us, well, we've got to encourage a student to make the best. Well, they're not making the best of themselves now. I mean, and the school is not helping them to. I get students all the time for counseling who tell me they've been advised in the school system to move down one channel because the doors are closed to them in the channel in which they're interested in. Well, you see, that kind of thinking has got to be eliminated.
Have you read the controversy between Irving Howe and Ralph Ellison that involved something of this? Irving Howe in Dissent last fall, and two long articles by Ralph Ellison in The New Leader, the last one being on February 4th.
No, I've not seen this.
It's on the same general point.
Right.
Ralph takes is being attacked, as it were, because he's not on the picket line. He's writing novels. As a traitor, therefore, is not like Richard Wright, not like, you see,
yeah,
others. And this revolves around the question of the personal role, the personal vocation. And it's a very eloquent piece by Ralph.
Oh, yes. All
pieces, they're very wonderful pieces of. He finally says, as an aside, that Irving Howe is like Bilbo. He's trying to put him in his place when he, Irving Howe, is already assigning him to a place. Rather funny.
Yeah.
Enough thought has been given to the actual vision of what society would be given the passive civil rights bill, given the mechanics tidied up. What vision do you have of that society if you've accomplished the mechanisms, you see, of civil rights and a few things like that? These obvious legal matters, what remains to be done? What kind of vision beyond that is there to be dealt with?
Well, in the first instance, we have not given enough time to defining what it is we want and then to spell this definition out in terms of the actual kinds of programs which are possible to achieve it. I think that most of us, and particularly in the emerging nonviolent movement, recognize this failure. It's not a failure of lack of interest, as much as it is a failure in the in time too involved at this moment in the growth of a movement to really get involved in the kind of some of the study that is necessary to working out this vision. Now, even if, though, we get the machinery that is necessary, most of us have another stage in terms of the nonviolent position. That's what the stage that we call the follow-up. That it will be necessary then for many groups and for many of us, even in the nonviolent movement itself, to program follow-up to make certain then that the machinery gets into high gear. And then that some of the problems that will come as that machinery gets to operating, makes it, some of these problems are going to be met openly. Now, we are already talking about what can be done to make certain that once the Civil Rights Bill has been passed, that it's going to be carried out. In fact, this weekend, there was a fair amount of conversation on follow-up campaigns to the Civil Rights Bill.
That's implementation.
Implementation, yes.
I'm thinking beyond implementation. I'm assuming that it could be enforced, you know, and by all legal. What about the attitude toward quotes, the white liberal, close quotes? This is involved somehow in that long-range question as the white man of more or less goodwill, you know.
Right. Well, I would think it's all according to what happens to the liberal over the next decade. We've gotten into many situations in which some of us feel, at least, that the white liberal simply has not kept up with the times and with the moral imperatives of the times.
In what sense now?
A good example of this is the chancellor at Vanderbilt University has long been known as a fine moderate. And not only that, but he certainly has done a major job.
Branscombe.
Branscombe at the point of Vanderbilt University, in terms of seeing to it that it would become a top-notch university, and working in this direction. He was known as a liberal and a moderate, but he was a liberal in a sense on his own term.
Yes.
And the coming in of the nonviolent movement, in spite of the warning from Montgomery and Martin Luther King back in 1955, you see, left him way behind.
Now, what about something else? Not, say, failures like that of a white man who happens to be, say, a retarded liberal, but the notion that it shouldn't be a white man's job at all to mix into these things, that the repudiation of the liberal, which is very widespread, you know. It can be everything from the attacks on Jack Greenberg to the attacks on no white man to mix into this.
Well, this is widespread.
There's a heavy documentation on this, of course.
Now, this is widespread primarily among northern Negro, radical elements. Using the term radical in the sense of being further away from, say, an NAACP position or the nonviolent movement. Those of us in the nonviolent movement recognize that in order to achieve the kind of society we want, we must have allies. The Negro is only 10% of America. We have got to have people from labor. We have got to have people from the political structures of America. We've got to have people from all categories of life, from the churches, who are going to want to have an America that means a larger, purer kind of democratic society. This cannot be done by the Negro. We all have to do it together. And so those of us in the nonviolent movement repudiate any effort to say that the white liberal, the white man, has no role to play. On the contrary, many of us work assiduously in order to help white people assume their rightful roles and assume the kind of role they can play better than anyone else can play in many instances.
There's another question related to this matter of future. We know the old problem mentioned, as far as I know, first by Du Bois and many times since, of the split in the Negro psyche. On one hand, the pull toward a Negro tradition, a Negro culture, a Negro world, the black mystique, all of this. On the other hand, the pull toward a complete integration with the Western European cultural history and the Judaic Christian philosophy and religion. Now, some people, this of course is not a problem, but some people it is a problem. How do you react to that question? Do you feel it's a real question, a real option, a real split?
Well, I think it's a real question. Very clearly, well documented from the whole, from the effort of sociology over the last 50, 75 years in the United States. Now, the point is, though, whether or not it is an issue that gains emphasis primarily because of our American society at large being a rejecting society and a hostile society towards the Negro.
You mean if segregation were formally abolished and civil rights literally enforced, this issue would cease to be an issue in the sense that now is an issue, is that it?
It would cease to be an issue as it now is. It would still be an issue in the sense that there will still be a need to continue to work on it. But what I mean is that once the invitation is extended to the Negro, that you are an American, be an American, then you'll find, as what already is happening, you see, that this is much less of a problem for the Negro. In one respect, in fact, you can say that there has been no dualism in the Negro at certain points. For example, in terms of loyalty to the United States, there's been no dualism. In terms of the idea that we have maintained ourselves, that we are Americans and know nothing else about America, there's been no dualism. This is one reason why your black nationalist groups have never had any, you know, large sway or meaning in the United States, simply because the Negro in America has felt himself to be an American and has had a basic loyalty to our country. But the dual, the second culture, or the subculture that he has developed, has been primarily because the major culture has constantly sought to reject him and keep him away from it.
I've heard one white man say this, a man who's sincere and honest and decent man. He said, "I feel now, after certain reading and certain contacts, that I am rejected in my efforts to be honest, rejected by large segments of even news he does not know, you see. I'm drawn back about this." I said, I'm not going to try to please anymore. I'm going to try to be follow my conscience." Of course, how can you please 10 different people?
Yes, right. Well, of course,
but he's speaking for a segment, a white segment. He's speaking for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have noticed, in among some of my own friends and in traveling, a growing frustration among white people at this point. Now, I think that a part of this is, of course, because the Negro is increasingly losing his pretension about himself and about the problem he faces.
What kind of pretension?
Well, for far too long, the best example of this would be
the meeting I just came from was a meeting on school dropouts. And it's gone on since 9:30 this morning. There was at least one Negro sociologist in the group of the major panel. And yet, all morning long, we've talked about the school dropout program without the whole question of the relationship of this to segregation and or the relationship of this to the Negro in this whole problem. This was not mentioned this morning at all. Now, some of us in Memphis recognize that we've had a lot of interracial contacts going on in Memphis, but without the Negro speaking the truth in love about the serious way that he feels personally, and also in the way he feels about the need for a changing city. Now, it's at this point, increasingly Negroes, however, are losing this pretension. He's beginning to more and more present it, so that you can say that for the first time there are larger numbers of white liberals who are hearing the real thoughts of Negroes. Now, I happen to think that's wonderful.
That's part of it, clearly. That's clearly part of it, yes.
And I think this is wonderful in the sense that there's a need for us to be honest before we're really going to come to the place of genuine understanding. So that I think that this frustration in part comes out of the changing form of communication that is going on. A changing form which, of course, I relish and glory in because I think it's necessary. So that then the other thing needs to be said is that the white liberal has in the past been able to give the mainline leadership for the civil rights movement. I mean, the whole pattern of legal using the ordinary procedures of our society comes, of course, from, in a sense, the middle class idea that when you've got a problem, you go to the channels where the problem can be solved. Now, we're being confronted with a thesis that says that these channels cannot really be challenged from within. They have to be challenged from without. In other words,
the non-legal, the extra-legal
yes,
approach.
Yes, right. The non-violent approach, which says, in this example, the issue is not a legal issue. It's a moral issue. Therefore, it has to be faced on moral ground. Well, this means then that the discussions of prior to 10 years ago are taking on another dimension which we've not been used to having in our discussions. And this undoubtedly is causing frustration. Now, may I point this out, though?
Please.
That it's not simply causing frustration among white liberals. It's causing tremendous frustrations among Negro liberals or Negro civil rights leaders. In other words, that this crisis that we find ourselves in is a crisis of leadership, a crisis of the past way in which we've conducted this whole problem.
It is a judgment of the ways in which Negro leaders and white leaders have acted together.
Is it also a judgment on the fact of a lack of political leadership for Negroes, a contempt of political leadership itself? One backlash from that?
This is true in the sense that, an example, Chicago, political leadership for the Negro was selected by the white political machinery.
But it was non-functional.
Yes, it was not leadership that grew out of the vote, let us say, out of the will of the Negro people. I think you see this crisis very clearly in the Chicago scene. It's all over the place, in fact, right now, where the political leadership of the Negro is that belonging to the machinery.
Stop, 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 stop. This is the end of tape. This is the end of this tape. This is the end of this tape. This is the end of this tape. This is the end of the interview with Reverend J.M. Lawson. Stop, stop, stop. No more on this tape. This is the end, 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 end here. No more on this tape.